Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we get started, I want to thank everyone who supported our listener support campaign. In particular, I want to thank Elizabeth for a one-time donation. And I also want to thank Mike for becoming our latest Patreon supporter at the Shamus level of $4 or more a month. You can support us on a one-time basis, support.greatdetectives.net, or also become a Patreon supporter, patreon.greatdetectives.net. And if we reach $600 a month in Patreon supporters by the end of the month, we will present a special summer podcast series chosen by our Patreon supporters. Well, now it's time for today's episode of The Avenger. The original air date on the program is December 20th, 1945, and the title is Fiery Death.
The Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay.
Sworn Enemy of Evil is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected two inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. The telepathic indicator, by which he is able to pick up thought flashes, and the secret diffusion gun, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, The Avenger and the Fiery Death.
Top of the morning to you, Frank.
Oh, good morning.
How's business?
Well, not bad, Mr. Meadows. People can't get along without newspapers. You want the usual?
Yes, please.
All right. There you are.
Well, it looks like you're going to have me for a customer for a long time, Frank.
Yes?
Had my doctor give me a complete checkup yesterday. He said I was a perfect specimen.
Well, that's the kind of news I like to hear from a doctor.
Yes, good health is great wealth, I always say. Well, see you tomorrow, Frank.
Right, Mr. Meadows.
Hey, mister. Mister, wait a minute.
You calling me?
Yeah. You dropped your fountain pen. Here.
Oh, thank you.
That's all right. That's
it. Hey, this isn't my pen. Hey, you made a mistake. This pen isn't mine. Oh, he didn't hear me. Well, he must have picked it up in front of the paper store. In the morning, I'll ask Frank if he knows whose it is. And in the meantime, it'll be safe enough in my pocket. What's the matter with me? I feel like I'm burning up. I can't
freezing. Help. Help.
That you, Benny?
Yes. Is everything under control, brother?
Yeah, everything went fine.
Is he dead?
I don't know yet. I ducked into the store to wait. There's a big crowd around him.
Joe get away all right?
Sure. He drove away before Meadows even knew what hit him.
Good. What's happening there now?
The cops are pushing the crowds back. Here comes the ambulance. We'll know in a minute, Benny. The doctor's getting out now. Hold on. Meadows is a goner, all right. They're putting a stretcher back in the ambulance. We've done it again, Benny. Meadows is on his way to the morgue.
Well, Inspector, judging from these medical reports, these men died from a strange kind of fever that the doctors haven't been able to identify.
That's right, Jim. We called in four specialists on this last case, and they all agreed that Meadows died from what appeared to be a raging fever.
But if he died from natural causes, why are you interested, Inspector?
Because we've had five cases like this one, Fern. The first two didn't cause much concern, but now the newspapers have gotten hold of it, and in a day or two, the public will be getting jittery.
Oh, you mean they'll think it's the beginning of an epidemic, huh?
That's right, Jim. And panic is the concern of the police department. I've got to avoid that if possible.
Well, frankly, Inspector, I think all these deaths should be investigated thoroughly. All five of them have one thing in common that strikes me as extremely peculiar.
What's that, Jim?
All these men died in the street. That seems to be stretching coincidence a little.
Yeah.
Inspector, I'd like to take a look at the effects found on these people when they died. Have you got them here?
Yes, I knew you'd want to see them right off, so I had them brought to headquarters. They're over here on this table. That pile of stuff belongs to Meadows.
Oh, he carried two fountain pens.
So did two of the others, apparently.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. I always carry two pens.
But each of these men carried one pen that was a little oversized.
You're right, Jim.
Inspector, I'd like to examine one of these large pens.
Well, go ahead, Jim.
No ink in it, for one thing. Let's have a look inside.
Now, don't ruin any of those pens, Jim. They've got to be handed over to the relatives of these people.
Nobody will want this pen, Inspector. It has no inside parts.
What?
Here, help me examine these other large ones. This is beginning to look interesting.
I don't get it. Why should a man carry a dummy pen around?
This one is empty inside, too, Jim.
Well, so is this.
And you can check off these last two. They're empty.
What do you make of it, Jim?
Just a minute. Let's take a look at these ordinary-sized pens.
This one looks all right, Jim.
No. These aren't dummies like the others. Wait a minute. Well, Inspector, smell this.
Smells slightly burnt to me.
This one does too, Jim. I can smell the rubber.
This third one too. Well, Jim, for heaven's sakes, what does this add up to?
Inspector, write me out a permit to take these things to my laboratory, will you?
All right, but I've got to know what you're up to, Jim. The newspapers will want a statement.
And you can give them one, Inspector. Tell them this is no fever epidemic, but an epidemic of murder.
I'll take that blindfold off you now, Doyle. There.
Well, look here, Trotter. I thought you said you were bringing me up here to have a talk with your boss.
That's right, Doyle.
Well, I don't see him. Where is he?
I'm here behind this screen, Doyle. I can see you, but you can't see me.
Well, why the dramatics? I came here to talk business.
Nobody's allowed to see the boss. Nobody but me. I'm the only one who knows who he is.
Quiet, Trotter. I'm sure Mr. Doyle realizes the value of caution. Otherwise, he wouldn't be here.
That's right. I don't care who you are. I'm here to hire you to do a job.
Trotter tells me you have a partner you wish to have put out of the way. Quietly.
Yes, and the job must be done tomorrow. What's your price?
$20,000.
That's pretty high. I only came prepared to pay $15,000.
I think you'll pay my price, Doyle.
What do you mean?
I look into the business of my clients before I do a job for them. I know that you've helped yourself to $50,000 of your firm's money. Your partner doesn't know it yet. And if you can get rid of him before he finds it out, no one will be the wiser.
All right, I'll pay. But you'll have to wait a few days for the other $5,000.
I'm willing to do that, Doyle. Because I have another weapon to use against you in case you don't come through.
No? What's that?
Your partner, Albert Frome, has no living relatives, right?
Yes.
6 months ago, at your suggestion, you and Frome took out an insurance policy, making the firm the beneficiary. Now, after Frome's death, you wouldn't want to run into any trouble collecting that insurance, would you? A few well-placed words would cause an investigation.
All right, you win. You'll get your money.
Good. Trotter will take the $15,000 you have with you. You're to bring the remaining five to the Midtown restaurant a week from today at 6 o'clock. Trotter will meet you.
Is everything set then?
Yes. Except for one thing.
And what's that?
Tomorrow, just before your partner leaves for lunch, give him that box on the table.
What's in this?
A fountain pen. Give it to him, and he'll be dead within the hour. Now our interview is over. Trotter, blindfold Mr. Doyle again and get him out of here.
Hold the torch a little lower, Fern.
Right, Jim.
We'll be finished in a minute.
Is the experiment working out, Jim?
Looks hopeful, Fern. All right, you can put the torch out now.
Thank heaven. I've just about reached the melting point myself. What does this experiment prove, Jim?
Several things, Fern. These dummy fountain pens were completely insulated. And they had several extra air holes. They must have contained some powerful chemical or an element that could be diffused without burning the person directly.
What kind of substance could that have been, Jim?
It would have to be something even more powerful than radium. And so far as I know, there's only one element that meets that requirement. It's actinium A.
Actinium A? What's that?
It's a powerful radioactive element, a branch product of uranium, found in pitchblende, that can be refined into a grayish powder. It disintegrates much faster than radium, and because of its extremely short-lived properties, it's been practically overlooked until just recently.
But how could actinium A be used to kill?
That's what I'm working on. Science hasn't completely solved the riddle of this element yet, but I do know that after its disintegration, the powder could be carried around in a man's pocket for weeks without any harmful effects.
That doesn't get us anywhere, then.
Yes, it does, Fern, because if a method could be devised whereby that actinium A could be recharged and released suddenly, it could penetrate the pores and nose and throat to such an extent that a man would instantly suffocate and die.
And the death would seem to be from natural causes?
Yes. But the mystery is, what chemical agent is capable of charging that actinium? It isn't heat. I've tested it at 500 degrees.
Jim, why don't you try the telepathic indicator? There's just a chance that you might pick up something.
That's a good idea. I'll turn it on.
In the meantime, I'll see you back for lunch. I'm hungry. Jim, what in the world happened?
The whole indicator blew out.
Oh, just when we needed it most.
Picked up a very powerful current of some kind. Fern, I think I found it.
What, Jim?
The mysterious charging agent. Let's see now. It's exactly 1 o'clock. If it develops that another of these fiery deaths occurred at that time, I've solved the riddle of how these murders are committed.
Yes, Jim. Albert Frome fell over dead in front of his office at exactly 1 o'clock.
Everything checks then, Inspector. We're on the trail at last.
Well, I'll have to take your word for that, Jim. So far, these deaths are just one big question mark to me.
Inspector, tell me everything you know about Albert Frome. Take notes on it, will you, Fern?
Yes, Jim. I'm ready.
Frome had a simple enough history, Jim. He was 40, single, in good health, didn't have any relatives, and seemed to be doing well in business.
Was he in business for himself?
No, he had a partner by the name of Raymond Doyle, but there's nothing suspicious there. Doyle's a respectable family man with 3 children.
Did Frome carry any insurance, Inspector?
Yes, about 6 months ago, he and Doyle each took out an insurance policy, making the firm beneficiary. A purely friendly precaution. Doyle was very frank about the whole thing.
Good enough.
Now listen here, Jim. We've got to get to the bottom of this case. I've lined up every known crook in the city and haven't found the thing. We've got to get some evidence so that we can bring charges against somebody.
Inspector, these dummy pens are evidence. Chrome had one, too.
But, Jim, you can't prove anything by these empty pens.
I think I can, Inspector.
How? I'm willing to listen.
I'll explain the whole thing later. Right now, Fern and I have some routine detective work to do.
Oh, routine stuff. We haven't time for that, Jim.
It's the only way, Inspector. You give me a week, and I'll deliver your criminals and all the evidence you want.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to work backwards from the death of Chrome. We're dealing with an organized murder ring, Inspector.
A murder ring? Well, why waste time on Chrome, then? He's dead.
Yes. But in the death of Albert Chrome, a small mistake was made. And by using that mistake as a springboard, I think we can crack these fiery deaths wide open.
To the Avenger and the Fiery Deaths.
Okay, Fern. I'll take over now.
Haven't got much to report, Jim. Doyle hasn't left his office all day. He had his lunch sent in.
I'll keep him covered for the rest of the evening, Fern. Now you go get some sleep.
Trailing Doyle has its advantages. I'm glad he likes baseball.
So am I, Fern, but I can't keep my mind on the game today. We've only 2 days left, and Doyle hasn't given us a single lead yet.
Maybe you'd be better off to pull him in, Jim, and try to make him talk.
That'll be our last resort. There's always a chance that he won't talk.
Maybe he's innocent, Jim.
No, he's in this up to his neck. He's bound to make a false move sometime. And when he does, I intend to be on hand.
Where do you suppose Doyle is headed for now, Jimmy?
He's not driving home, that's certain, Fern. He's headed back to our town.
He didn't place a single bet at the races, Jimmy.
No. That $5,000 he withdrew from the bank this morning is payoff money. I'm sure of it. We'll just stick to him like leeches and see where he delivers it. You keep your eye on Doyle, but listen carefully to what I'm saying to you.
Yes, Jim.
I'm certain Doyle has an appointment here. He keeps watching the door nervously, and this isn't the sort of restaurant a successful businessman comes to just for pleasure.
It certainly isn't. I'm starved, but I can't eat this food. Jim, a man just joined Doyle.
Yes. That looks like our man, all right. Fern, I'm going to follow that man when he leaves here.
Oh, Jim.
It's the only way to get to the bottom of this murder ring. Now, I'll pretend I'm a customer, a very tough one, and that I want a job done immediately.
Jim, what if he tumbles to you? A man like that would just as soon kill you as look at you.
I've seen enough criminals to be able to give you a good imitation of one, Fern. Now, in a minute, I'll leave and wait for our friend outside.
What about me? What can I do?
You stay here and pretend to eat your dinner, but when our man leaves the restaurant, follow him out. Get in my car and be ready to follow us when we drive away. That fellow is certain to have a car here. Have you got that, Fern?
Yes.
Be sure to keep well behind us. When we reach our destination, call Inspector White and give him the address. Then you drive directly to headquarters and wait for me there.
All right. Jim, look.
Yeah?
Doyle is handing that man a small package.
It's the payoff, all right.
Oh, gosh, Jim, I'm scared.
Don't be, Fern. When the time comes, the Avenger will step in. I'm going now.
Good luck, Jim.
Yes, sir, that'll be $3.
Oh, here you are. The extra check is for the young lady over there.
Oh, yes, sir.
And here's an extra 10 for you, if you know the name of that man facing us at the corner table.
Yes, sir. That's a fella by the name of Trotter. He comes in here a lot.
Oh, yes, I thought that's who it was. I just wanted to make sure. Here's your 10.
Thanks, mister. Come in again.
What do you want? I don't know you.
I know you, though, and I got business with you. Is this your car in the alley?
Yeah, sure.
Get in. We'll talk there.
Hey, who do you think...
Get in, I said.
All right, now what's the idea, bud? Who are you?
A customer for you, Trotter.
A customer? You must be crazy. Get out of here or I'll...
If you know what's healthy for you, you'll listen. You can stop stalling. I know all about your racket.
Says you. Hey, what do you take me for?
You don't need to tip your mitt. I'll tell you. I know that package you got contains $5,000 of payoff dough you just collected from a guy by the name of Doyle for bumping off his partner, Albert Frome.
How do you know so much?
Well, you got quite a reputation among us, Monster Trotter. You and your boss run a smart racket. That's why I hooked you up. I want a rush job done.
Nothing doing. We take 2 weeks on all our jobs. You'd have to be cased first.
Now, look, I can't wait for that. I got to get rid of a guy that's going to start singing to the cops any minute. My Rob's willing to pay you $50,000 to shut him up.
$50,000?
Yep. If you'll do the job tomorrow morning.
Well, I don't know. You'd have to talk it over with the boss.
Let's get going, then.
Not so fast, wise guy. I'll have to put a blindfold on you. It's a rule.
Okay. You don't take any chances, do you?
Can't afford to. Here. Here, this... bandage fits right over the forehead and the eyes.
Say, a perfect fit, huh?
Now, pull your hat down.
Whatever you say.
Hey, what are you up to? Why did you jump into the back seat?
Now, listen, Trotter. I'm not taking any chances on you dumping me out someplace. I'll just sit here right behind you with my hands on your shoulders. And you better call out every move you make. Because if you make a false one, it's your last. I got a gun.
Pretty smart, ain't you?
Don't try anything, that's all. I'll keep this blindfold on. You can watch me in the mirror. Now, start driving.
I'm pulling up. I gotta wait here for a signal before I drive into the alley.
What's the matter? The boss afraid you might be followed?
That ain't impossible. Okay, we got the go-ahead. Here we are. All right, hop out.
Hey, can't you take this blindfold off me now, Trotter?
Not till we get upstairs.
Huh? Well, I'll follow you then.
Up these stairs. All right, wait a minute. I gotta unlock the door. All right, inside, bud. Okay, now you can take off the blinders.
Yeah, with pleasure.
I'll take your gun, too. No rods allowed when you talk to the boss.
Red tape, huh? Okay, here.
You wait here. I'll go in and see if the boss will talk to you. Hey, what's your name?
Just call me Jones.
Okay, if that's the way you want it. I'll be back in a minute.
Trotter, you're in for a surprise. It's time for your customer to disappear and for the Avenger to take over.
Okay, bud, Hey, he's gone. But how did he get out of a locked room? Hey, Benny!
Yeah? What's up, Trotter?
The guy's gone. I don't know how he got out, but he did.
You and your 50 grand. I'll bet he was a cop.
No, he was a mug. I couldn't make a mistake like that.
You're a stupid fool. Go pack our stuff. We've got to be out of here in 5 minutes. I'll take care of things in here.
Yeah, we better blow, all right. If I ever lay eyes on that guy, I'll tear the
seat. Stupid, incompetent punk. Not his life for this.
The state will save you the trouble, Benny.
Huh?
It wants you both for murder.
Who's that? Who's in here?
It's the Avenger, Benny.
The Avenger? So that's who it is.
Yes. I'm here to put an end to your wholesale murders, Benny.
That's what you think. You've met your match this time, Avenger. Invisible or not, I have a weapon that can kill you. You're trapped.
We shall see.
This is going to give me more pleasure than any other crime I've committed. To kill the Avenger is the dream of every criminal. But the honor will be mine.
May I inquire how I am to die?
Sure. All I got to do is pull this switch and this whole room will be charged with electricity.
I guess that. But what of you? What happens to you, Benny?
Me? My clothes and shoes are completely insulated.
Pull the switch then, Benny, and let's see what happens.
I will.
I'm still here, Benny.
The electricity. It's not working.
No. I pulled the wires when I first came in.
You're clever. But if I can't destroy you, I can destroy the evidence that you use against me. You'll never know the secret of my power ray machine. I'll smash it into 1,000 pieces.
Stay away from that machine, Benny.
No, I won't. I'll smash it.
Stay away, I said. Take this, then.
Oh.
A little man with a dangerous weapon. The history of crime keeps repeating itself.
Now, just a minute, Jim. You say these murders were committed by planting these dummy fountain pens, which contained actinium A on each of the victims.
That's right, Inspector. The actinium served as a receiver for a special power ray generated by this cathode ray machine.
Well, what kind of a ray was it, Jim?
The Omega ray. This was emitted along with the regular alpha, theta, and gamma rays from the machine. It was able to recharge the actinium A, which disintegrated again in 2,000ths of a second. During this lightning process, all the oxygen within the body of the victim was completely ionized, and he died from a combination of heat and suffocation.
But wouldn't the people around the victim feel the ray, Jim?
No, Fern. The ray was harmless without the actinium, and the actinium was harmless until the ray was focused on it.
But how could this ray be focused on people in the street?
This machine is portable. It was operated from a cruising car.
Well, that's some scheme, Jim. I guess you have to be a scientist to be a policeman these days.
Well, it often helps, Inspector.
Jim, there's one other thing.
Yes, ma'am?
I know you picked up this ray on a telescopic indicator just at the time Frome was killed.
That's right. It blew the indicator out.
But what was that mistake you spoke of that made you suspicious enough of Doyle to concentrate on him?
Yes, Jim, you never explained that to me either.
Doyle had a wife and three children. He would hardly make his business firm the beneficiary of his insurance, unless he expected to outlive his partner. That put me on the trail of Doyle, and finally led us to Benny.
Okay, Jim. Send in a complete report on it.
Right. What's your hurry, Inspector?
I've started going to night school, Jim. I'm taking general science.
All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
The Avenger.
Hi, this is Andrew from OTRWesterns.com. I wanted to invite you to come take a look at our site. We stream live OTR Westerns 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, along with putting out podcasts of old-time radio westerns. Check us out at OTRWesterns.com. You're listening to The Great Detectives of Old-Time Radio with Adam Graham. Now let's get back into the show.
Welcome back. Well, an interesting mystery as always. And it does continue to be interesting that the Avenger, a lot like the later episodes of The Shadow, relied less and less on the tricks, you know, using them basically one time each an episode, as opposed to all the time. Well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback, and we start with an email from Bishop Andrew, who writes, while listening to yesterday's installment of The Avenger, I thought this is to OTR superhero shows what Get Smart was to spy thriller and TV programs. You seem to like all kinds of audio radio drama, so I'd like to recommend the BBC production of War and Peace. It just came up for sale on iTunes. I suppose to tie in with the miniseries that ran in January, this audio drama is remarkably well done. Excellent acting and evocative sound effects. Well, thanks so much for the recommendation, and it's a good idea. I mean, I think everybody will mention reading the book War and Peace, but that is always a daunting challenge, so the audio drama might be a good idea. I love Get Smart. Watched it all the time when I was growing up, and we have some friends that have the DVD box set, and I would so like to borrow and binge-watch that whole thing. Such a great series. And Kevin offers kind of an expert thought on the audio quality of the Avengers organ music. He writes, "Hi, Adam. First, thanks again for all you put into the podcast, including all the research and commentary. I thoroughly enjoy it, and others have said, even shows that aren't my favorites become interesting and educational. A couple items about the Avenger, which I'm glad you are presenting. In the last couple episodes, we have seemed to have changed Avenger actors. Who is the current actor?" Well, I don't believe there was any change. It should be James Monks throughout the entire role, though audio quality can sometimes do something to various radio voices, including Mr. Monks, who is somewhat flexible. He does a lot of character work in old-time radio. Regarding the organ music, as an organist myself and one who has listened to hours of OTR music and who has even played for recreations of some of these shows, I have the following comments. I would agree with many who have expressed negative opinions about the intermission music. That little waltz has to be the absolute worst choice I can imagine, even for my old-fashioned ears. As we groan and cringe, think about the poor organist who had to play it 3 or 4 times each show. It was not pre-recorded, as it had to be timed to fit the slot it was filling. If you listen, each one is slightly different, and one of them is always in two short sections filling the end side of the transcription disc, and a second at the beginning of side two. I'm not sure why they vary so much when a commercial break should have been the same length, but there are plenty to plainly times when they are much shorter or longer than others, and you can hear the organist cutting sections and speeding the tempo or drawing out longer, trying to stay with the stopwatch. It is a strange, unusual situation in my experience, but I'm certainly glad I didn't have to play that show time after time. Well, the important thing to keep in mind with music, like even on a show that does have sponsors like Dragnet, which we generally cut the ads from, but with Dragnet, you would have a very short ad at the start, generally about 30 seconds. In the middle, you'd have about a two-minute ad, and then at the end, you'd have 45 seconds, and then occasionally a 30-second ad afterwards. So the difference in structure is pretty common for old-time radio ads. And I do have to say that if they made the organist play all this, and it was only for film music, which the local sponsors were going to remove and replace with their own ads, that's kind of an astounding waste of work because, you know, the organist sits there and plays all this and nobody is going to hear it other than perhaps the sponsors when listening to a sample program. So, or us all these years later. He goes on to write about old-time radio organ music in general, two things to keep in mind. There was a different stylistic listening taste at the time, which made the organ more palatable to many people. But also the organ, especially the electronic Hammond, was one of the most compact instruments for playing a full score as required by radio drama. An orchestra not only required instrumentalists, but a composer, arranger, conductor, much more space, preparation time, and money. The show script and improvised appropriate music when required. One organist friend tells about playing from a rolling platform where she finished a show, the organ was unplugged, and she and the whole thing were pushed down the hall to another studio to play the next show immediately following. So it's no surprise that you hear the organ so much in these shows, and especially the Hammond electric organ, which could be put nearly anywhere, anytime. It will never be accepted as everybody's favorite, and wasn't even then. But a good organist could at least take some of the corniness out of the music and really make it strengthen the drama. Not every organist you hear was really good at it, but there were many jewels out there who knew their work well. Thanks again, Adam, for all you do. And Kevin, thanks so much for your feedback. And those are the type of letters I absolutely love getting because I really did learn something from it. And you're right, there are some great organ music that was used in old-time radio. Probably my favorite organ score was for The Adventure of Frank Race in terms of detective drama. And even the organ version of the Let George Do It theme was pretty good. And organs can produce some amazing music. I've heard some Bach and a really special Easter presentation that was, you know, absolutely stunning. So while it's possible for organ music to be like it is on The Avenger, that's not always the case, and it can really be quite beautiful, and I appreciate your sharing with us. All right, well, that will do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, and next week, another episode of The Avenger. In the meantime, send your comments to box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.